What we're gonna do right here is go back, way back, back into time.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue. Welcome to my neighborhood, the Avenue. I grew up here, and each week I'll be sharing the sounds and stories of the people that made the Avenue great. Welcome back to the Avenue. On this week's show, we'll take a trip across the White River to the neighborhood of Hallville. Hallville is located just a few blocks west of Indiana Avenue. Many famous Avenue musicians lived in Hallville, including Wes Montgomery and his brothers Buddy and Monk. On this week's show, we'll talk with a Hallville musician who gained international fame as a vocalist. George Chandler was born in Atlanta, Georgia in 1944. He moved to Neptown as a teenager during the 1950s. During his time in Indianapolis, George became music minister of the Mount Vernon Baptist Church, located in Hallville at 709 North Belmont Avenue. George sang with many Avenue music greats at Mount Vernon, including Johnny May Oliver and Henry Hinch. But George's time in Indianapolis was cut short. In the mid-1960s, he was drafted into the military. George was stationed in Italy, where he formed the Four Kents, a soul music act that sang in English and Italian. After his time in the service, George relocated to London, beginning his rise to fame in the music industry. During the late 1970s, George joined the Olympic Runners, one of the top funk bands in England. He also sang backup for music superstars, including Tina Turner, Elton John, and Paul McCartney. In 1988, George co-founded London Beat and co-wrote the band's worldwide hit, I've Been Thinking About You. George Chandler will join us in just a moment. But first, let's hear a classic track he recorded with the Olympic Runners. From 1978, this is Whatever It Takes.
Ooh, whatever it takes. You gotta know yourself and be yourself.
Was the Olympic Runners with Whatever It Takes, featuring George Chandler on vocals. WFYI's Kyle Long recently spoke to George. Let's join their conversation.
I grew up in Atlanta, Georgia. I was born in Atlanta. And when I was 15, I came to Indianapolis because my real mother lived in Indianapolis. I was raised by my father's sister, my aunt. And so I came to Indianapolis when I was in 1959, when I was 15.
What was your mother's name, if you don't mind
sharing? My mother's name was Ira, E-R-A, Ira Chandler.
What was that transition like for you? Atlanta and Indianapolis were probably very different cities back then.
Certainly was. At the time, I thought it was the worst thing that had ever happened to me in my life. Because in Atlanta, I had started singing when I was about 12, 13. I used to go to see the Soul Stirrers when they had Sam Cooke was the lead singer, and he was my idol. And to this day, to me, he's the greatest singer that ever lived. And the first thing I did after seeing Sam Cooke for the first time was form a group with my friend, and we were the same age. Eventually, I formed a group when I got to high school, and we had our own radio show on Sunday morning. And I was so happy with that. And all of a sudden, I got the news that I had to come and live in Indianapolis.
So you came to Indianapolis, it's 1959, and you were 15 years old, right? Is that correct, 14, 15? What part of town did your mom live in at that time? Where were you staying?
We lived on Hall Place, which is just off 16th Street.
Right.
The street doesn't exist anymore.
Was the transition as bad as you were sort of fearing it would be in your mind? I know you didn't want to leave Atlanta, but once you got to Indianapolis, how did it go?
It was still okay because, first of all, coming from Atlanta, I came from a totally segregated society. So I start going to school. I start going to Shortridge High School. And at that time, Shortridge was, I would say it must have been about 60% white and 40% black. I had to adjust to that. So I got past that first year, and I went back to Atlanta the following summer. And I got with my friends and started singing again, you know, because I was in Atlanta for the whole summer for about 2 months. And when I came back to Indianapolis, I decided that I wanted to sing. And I met this girl who was in the school choir, because by that time I was in the school choir. And she was in a gospel choir, a church choir. And she kept asking me to come, inviting me to come, and I would always put it off. So finally I came, and that was the best decision I ever made in my life. I joined the choir, the Oliver Youth Choir. Mm. And that's, by the way, that's where I met Henry.
And that was at Mount Vernon Baptist Church, right, in Hawville?
That's correct, yeah.
And was this is just a crazy guess, but was this woman Johnny Mae Oliver by any chance that took you out
there? That's correct.
Wow, because I know
that's
right. I know she went to Shortridge, and I knew she was a big part of the choir there. And, you know, I've been trying to do research on her, and sadly, I don't think she ever recorded, but she was a real big force in the local music scene. Tell me about Johnny Mae. She sang with the Moonlighters. She was involved with the church. Tell me about Johnny Mae Oliver as a vocalist.
As a vocalist, she was absolutely outstanding. She was probably, at the time, she was the best vocalist in Indianapolis at the time. She encouraged so many other people. She encouraged the other members in the choir, you know, like myself and like Cheryl Chandler, who was a fantastic singer as well, Henry Inch. She was so encouraging to all of us.
You mentioned she took you to Mount Vernon Baptist Church, and this reignited your passion for singing. What was it about the music you heard there that spoke to you?
It wasn't just the music. It was the people that were involved in this choir. Mm. The man who was the leader of this choir was a man called Louis Dinwiddie. And he put his own money into keeping kids off the street. That was actually what the Oliver Youth Choir did. It kept us off the street. We always had some place to go on holidays. We always had some on Sundays. We were together from 9 o'clock in the morning until, you know, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night on Sundays.
This church is famous today in Indianapolis as the home of the late Reverend Moselle Sanders, who was a significant figure in the struggle for civil rights here in Indianapolis and housing equality. He was beyond his work at the church. He really was an important figure in the community. Did you work much with Moselle Sanders while you were there? Did you get to know him at all?
Yes, I did, because Moselle decided that he wanted to have all the choirs on like the first Sunday, all the choirs to sing together. and it was called the Mass Choir. And he got Raymond Raspberry, who was the leader of the Raspberry Gospel Singers, to be the administrator of this choir because he played keyboards, and I was the director of the choir. So I was getting really good experience for my future, even though I didn't realize it at the time. All this time, I'm just doing all of this because I just love doing it.
Obviously, you were very involved in the church, singing at Mount Vernon. Were you doing any secular music at that time? Were you singing with any local groups or doing any solo singing around the city outside of the church?
At that time, Kyle, you were either a gospel singer or you were an R&B singer. Mm. You couldn't do both. So what I used to do, but I did used to sneak, and when the school used to have talent shows, I used to teach the groups. I would choose which group I was going to work with, and I would teach them the songs and how to present the songs. You know, I remember one of the songs was, I don't know how old you are, but if you remember a doo-wop song called Get a Job.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, famous.
Yeah. That was one of the songs that I taught them. And so I used to teach. But I never sung any R&B songs until I came to Europe.
You know, this was a very meaningful time here, it sounds like, in terms of your work with Mount Vernon Baptist Church. This kind of equipped you with a lot of skills that you would use later in your musical career. Do you see it that way? How did your time in
Absolutely.
Indianapolis kind of prepare you for the work you would do in Europe? Yeah, tell me about that.
Absolutely. Working with the Oliver Youth Choir, it was like going to college. It was like learning how to be a leader, how to arrange songs, and all of that kind of stuff. It was like a school. Mm. And thank God for Mr. Dinwiddie for allowing us, you know, to have that.
In the mid-1960s, George Chandler was drafted into the military. He was stationed in Italy, where he formed the Four Kents, a soul music act that recorded in English and Italian. Let's take a break from our conversation with George and listen to a pair of tracks that he cut with the Four Kents during the late 1960s. That was the Four Kents with Gimme a Little Sign, featuring George Chandler on lead vocals. And George Chandler is our guest this week. Let's return to our conversation with George as he discusses his work with the Four Kents.
And George, you mentioned you weren't involved in singing R&B music during your time in Indianapolis, but in the mid-60s, you moved to Italy and you end up joining an R&B group called the Four Kents. What sequence of events caused this change in your life?
When I was 21, I got drafted into the Army. Mm. That was during the buildup for the Vietnam War. But I was fortunate. Instead of going to Vietnam, I was stationed in Italy. And because I've been singing all my life, I still wanted to sing. But I knew that the guys in the Army, they didn't want to hear gospel. They wanted to hear R&B, Temptations, Four Tops, you know. And so that's what I did. I formed a group. I met guys. It took me about 6 months to form this group, because by that time I knew that to form a group, you have to have a certain kinds of guys, personalities have to mix as well as the singing. And we formed a group, and me and those guys now are still like brothers. We still see each other once a year. We have reunions, and this has been going on since the 70s.
Dato mi il biglietto d'aereo, non ho tempo per il treno mai.
Poco fa ho deciso, voglio andare a casa.
Questa sera ho ricevuto una lettera, non importa quanti soldi devo spendere, voglio partire al più presto.
Ora ho mal deciso, voglio andare a casa.
Questa sera ho ricevuto una lettera.
The group had a lot of success. You made a lot of records. You were actually singing soul music in Italian on some of these records. Tell me about that. Was that an unusual thing for you at the time, or was that something you jumped into with the enthusiasm?
Well, we actually had no choice. And that was a learning experience as well, because we did most of the songs that we did were cover versions. But they were written in Italian. Mm. And so we had to learn to sing in Italian, which was helpful in learning to speak Italian and learning to understand Italian as well. And it was all great. But later on, toward the end of our career, the record company allowed us to do an album of our own songs. But we didn't do it as the Four Kents. We did it as a group called Sage. Called Sage.
Yeah, I love that record. I wanted to ask you about that. That's an incredible album, and that's all your original music on that record?
That's right. That was the chance they gave us to finally, you know, sing our own stuff, our own music, and not do any covers. And I'm still, to this day, I'm very proud of that album.
Yeah. At that point, when you made that record, had you kind of mentally made that transition from gospel singer to R&B singer? Where was your head at? Because it sounds like early in your career, you were very committed to gospel music. How did that kind of change and you opened up to singing secular music?
Now, even though all these years that I was doing gospel in Atlanta and in Indianapolis, I was right up current with R&B music. I always loved R&B music. I always followed it. I mean, I didn't sing it, but I always followed it. And so when we started doing R&B music, it wasn't a giant step in any way. It was just like, because at that time you got to understand that was when soul music was in style. Mm. And the style of singing was gospel music. Wilson Pickett, Otis Redding, David Ruffin, you know, they were singing in a gospel style.
Let's take a break from our conversation with George Chandler and listen to a track he recorded in 1973 as part of the Italian band Sage. From their album Emancipated, this is It Still Goes On.
On a tiny decoration.
Echoes of Indiana Avenue will return with more words and music from George Chandler after this short break.
This is Butch Slaughter, and you're listening to the Echoes of Indiana Avenue.
Our guest this week is vocalist George Chandler. He started his music career at the Mount Vernon Baptist Church in Hall Hill. During the 1970s and 80s, George sang with the top funk and soul acts of England. Up next, we'll listen to a 1974 track that George recorded with the British funk band Gonzales. This is No Way.
My weary joints are aching. My life is out of joint. Week in, week out, we sweat it out. I just don't get the point. The cost of living's higher, but I can't get high. Could say I'm living in luxury, but that's a hopeless lie. I'm dying for prosperity. I can't afford to die. No.
That was Gonzales with No Way, featuring George Chandler on lead vocals. And George Chandler is our guest this week. He recently spoke with WFYI's Kyle Long. Let's return to their conversation as George discusses his work in the British music scene.
And George, in the 1970s, you eventually left Italy and relocated to England, where you had an unbelievable run of success with various different projects, including the funk band Olympic Runners. You eventually, co-found London Beat and have this huge, massive international record that blows up. I've been thinking about you. Tell me about moving to London and what prompted that and kind of how you got so immersed in the music scene there.
My wife was pregnant with our second child, and guess what our second child's name is? Kyle.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Nice.
The four kids were like coming to the end. You know what I mean? So I moved to England. I didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't know if I was going to come back to the States or whether I was going to, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But things just happened because I've always done music. I was just, got into music. And the first group I started singing with when I got here was a group called Gonzales. Mm-hmm. And that was the lead singer before me in Gonzales. Was Carl Douglas.
Wow.
You remember Carl Douglas?
Kung Fu Fighting.
It was Kung Fu Fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I took his place. And that's how my music career started over here in England. And I came home in 1974. And when I came back to England, I decided that I was going to put all of my work, all of my energies into the music business. And that's when I joined the Olympic Runners, and we had a couple of hits in the States and as well as England. And then I started doing backing voices on just about everybody's record who was making records in England. And that was great because that was from like 1975, right up until 84.
Yeah, you sang on a lot of classic records, from what I know. You sang on a Tina Turner album. Tell me about some of the memorable sessions you had as a backing vocalist. Anything come to mind?
Well, we did Tina Turner, Paul McCartney. We did Elton John. We did, what's the lead singer for The Who?
Roger Daltrey, yeah.
Yeah. We did Fine Young Cannibals. Mm. I mean, it's just so many.
let's take a break from our conversation with George Chandler and listen to a classic disco song that he recorded with the Olympic Runners. From 1978, this is Sir Dance-A-Lot. That was the Olympic Runners with Sir Dance-A-Lot, featuring George Chandler on lead vocals. And George Chandler is our guest this week. Let's return to our conversation with George as he discusses his work with London Beat.
You know, eventually you get involved with this project, London Beat, and make one of the biggest dance records of all time. I mean, I grew up in the 90s, and your song with London Beat was just like constantly being played when I was a kid. How did you join this group? And yeah, what was it like to create this monumental hit record that's still everywhere today? It's still played all the time.
Well, when I was doing backing vocals, we did it. It was the guys in, who eventually became London Beat, Jimmy Chambers and Jimmy Helms. And then in 1984, Paul Young asked us to join him and go do backing vocals with him on his and tour with him. And we went out on the road with Paul Young from December of 1984 until I think March of 86, we were with Paul Young. And then we sit down and we talk. We said, "Oh, this is nice, ain't it? Why don't we put something together since we kind of know how this thing worked now?" And that's what happened. We decided that we was going to put together a group, and with the advance that we got from the recording contract, we used that to buy recording equipment, and we put the recording equipment in what used to be my son's bedroom, and we made all our records in my son's bedroom.
Wow.
We did 3 albums.
That's unbelievable. Did it surprise you how big the music became? I mean, it was a massive, massive hit. I've been thinking about you.
It was all on purpose, because by that time you kind of understood how the music business worked. I mean, if you're doing backing vocals, you so many songs, you go in and they play the song to you, and you know before you even anything, you know that that's a terrible song and it's never going to be a hit. Mm. And by same token, you can do a session and they play you a song and you say, "Oh yeah, that's going to be a hit." You just kind of know, have an idea of what kind of song. And as we were a black group, except one of the guys was white, our idea was this: we can't just be just as good. Our song can't be just as good as. Just like everything black, it's got to be better than. And that was always our thing. And we not only did we have hits, what I've been thinking about, we had hits in Germany, Amsterdam, we had all over Europe with other songs besides I'm Thinking About You.
From 1990, this is London Beat with I've Been Thinking About You. That was London Beat with I've Been Thinking About You, co-written by our guest this week, George Chandler. Let's return to our conversation.
What are you doing today? Are you still making music? Are you still out there singing in the studio or performing live?
Absolutely not. I am not singing. I retired in 1992. And I have been, as they say, sitting on my behind since 1992. I do exactly what I want to do. And what I like is music, and I like listening to music. And I like history, and that's what I do. I'm very lucky. I realize that. I had, Kyle, for a job, the thing that I enjoyed doing the most. And I remember the first time, the first big paycheck I got, royalty statement, I started crying. And the guys asked me, "Why are you crying, man?" I said, "I'm crying because I would have done it for nothing. Because I had for a job." I mean, I would say 90% of the people in the world, they have a job, but it's not necessarily the job, the thing that they enjoy doing the most. But I was lucky. I had for a job the thing that I enjoy doing the most. And it brings tears to my eyes just thinking about it sometimes. I'll be 80 years old next year.
And George, finally, you know, our mutual friend Henry Hinch told me that you were here in Indianapolis not that long ago. Do you still have family here? Do you come back here at all? Have you been back to Mount Vernon Church?
No. I come back to see my sisters. I have sisters and a brother still in and out. One of my sisters passed away this year. That's why I was back in Indianapolis this summer. But I do come back to see the family, yes. I come back to Indianapolis and to Atlanta.
Thank you so much for taking time to share your extraordinary history in Indianapolis and outside of Indianapolis with us. I think it's incredible that you've taken these things that you learned at Mount Vernon Baptist Church in Hawville and just taken this worldwide and influenced people in ways that I think you would have found hard to believe when you were a kid out in Hawville.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you so much. Any final thoughts you want to share with the listeners here in Indianapolis, George?
Thank you for being my school.
Yeah.
We'll end this week's show with a classic solo single from George Chandler. We'll hear "This Could Be the Night," released in 1982. That's all the time we have this week. Thanks to our guest, George Chandler. And thank you for listening. You can meet me here on the Avenue again next week, same time, same place. And you can find the Echoes of Indiana Avenue podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you download your podcast. Echoes of Indiana Avenue is written and produced by Kyle Long, and hosted and co-produced by me, Herman Butch Slaughter.
Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. Nobody knows on uptown, baby, like I do. If you will stop and listen, I will tell you a thing or two.